Hello, everybody. Welcome to Red Pill Your Healthcast. We are here with a special guest today, Dr. Ben Moralia. He is the Chief Clinical Officer at Airway Health Solutions and at Tooth Pillow. And he is a general dentist that has found a passion with focusing on education for poor jaw development and airway health. So I would like to talk first about how you got started. Like, you're a general dentist. What does that look like when you are seeing patients that have this airway issue? How does that look like you getting started focusing on the airway?
So thank you, Lauren, for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity. And I started out 31 years ago in dentistry, and I spent the first 10 years of my practice fixing teeth. I was doing crown and bridge and implant dentistry, and I was fixing teeth in adults. And during that 10 years, what we were doing, we were a family care practice, and we had children coming in for the hygiene visits and sealants and little fillings because I could do that, and it was fun to do. When you start off, you treat the kids as they need to. But it was the teeth. It was a tooth-focused. So of course, when you're seeing these kids and they're turning 11, you send them to the orthodontist. And when you send them to the orthodontist, they work on the child for a couple of years, you get them back and you see the results. And there were some things that were disappointing to me. At the top of the list was extracting teeth. And so I just could never wrap my head around taking teeth out. And a lot of times I was looking in there and I'm saying, I don't even think that's that bad. Like the crowding didn't seem so bad to me. But again, back then, 21 years ago, I didn't know enough. So it just didn't sit right with me. So I wasn't comfortable extracting teeth. Then you see the results and you're looking at the results, but then you have these children in the practice because you're seeing them every 6 months getting their teeth clean. But if they stop wearing the retainer, the teeth start getting crowded again and the bites start to shift. And so there's relapse. You learn about this fancy word relapse. And certainly if a child doesn't wear their retainer, the teeth are shifting back. Well, extracting teeth and the teeth shifting back and, you know, the different things that you start learning about when it comes to TMD or TMJ, like jaw pain. So I have these children in the practice and they don't really have any type of symptoms, but sometimes they would get their braces on and have pain or symptoms in the jaws. And so I get it. If your teeth are being moved, your teeth would be sore, but why are the jaws so uncomfortable and sore? And I didn't know anything more to think, well, I don't know why they're this way. I'm trying to figure this out. But all of this adds up to, I was a little bit disappointed in the techniques. I was a little bit disappointed in the outcomes. I was a little disappointed in the stability, which really didn't seem to be there at all. And then what high school child and college student is wearing their retainers well? None of them really do. So I feel like, boy, this is a very temporary service. We're making these teeth straight. It's taking 2 to 3 years to make these teeth straight. And the child stops wearing their retainer, and almost instantly you see the shifting and the changing. And it seemed like a disappointment to me. I started taking classes. So I started taking classes, and immediately I just felt like there had to be a different way. And I learned that there's an entire group out there and they're called the expansive orthodontics category. So there is a difference between retractive orthodontics and expansive orthodontics. And so expansive orthodontics tends to focus on the foundation, not the teeth. So braces are a tooth-focused approach. Braces make your teeth straight, but temporarily, really, because without a retainer forever, they're going to move. Whereas the expansive orthodontics groups, and I was being taught by general dentists as well as other orthodontists who were doing expansive orthodontics, I was taught how to develop the jaws early. And so if you go after the foundation, then the teeth have room and you need to do less to the teeth later. So it's a foundation focused, you know, approach. Foundation first, teeth second. So class after class after class, and I start learning about different things, learn about expanders, learn about guidance appliances, which we'll probably talk a whole lot more about in a little while. But when you start learning about these things, then you start learning about breathing. And then that comes in. And then muscles come in. And then the fancy words, like all of a sudden you learn myofunctional therapy, orofacial myofunctional therapy starts falling into place. Then you're treating children. So, okay, 10 years into practice, I pivoted. I started to treat children with growth and development. So no longer am I fixing teeth. Now I'm trying to help them grow and develop earlier. And between 3 and 12, we have this wonderful opportunity to get involved and help the foundation get bigger so the teeth can actually fit in. Well, that immediately eliminated extraction opportunities. No child needed extractions when we helped the foundation grow bigger. And so given this history of 21 years, I can now say 21 straight years of treating children with earlier treatment, and we have not taken out a single tooth, not one tooth. We don't take out baby teeth early to make room for the permanent teeth that we say are going to be crowding and don't fit. And we don't take out permanent teeth at any age either. So no extractions, and the children have all their teeth. So then we learn about a whole bunch of other things like frenum. And so this fancy word frenum, I didn't know that word 21 years ago. So the educational process, you start learning about, oh, tongue tie. Loosely, people say tongue tie or lip tie. And then you start putting pieces together and like, wait a second, we have this opportunity to kind of grow the jaws earlier, get them back to where they belong, get your teeth going where they belong, but then work on breathing, altering the mouth breathing to nose breathing, because we recognize there's a lot of mouth breathing going on. And then the last thing is not only getting the muscles all right, but making sure there isn't a frenum that's too tight, restricting the muscles from behaving properly. So you start putting all of this together and it leads to a different pathway to treat a child. And now I can say, you know, after a decade of doing it, wow, I've treated so many, I should teach this. So 10 years into this, I started teaching other dentists how to do it. So now a few offices pop up around the country that are treating children earlier because they wanted to help earlier. But even so, you fast forward another 8 years and it still didn't seem to be reaching the masses. And that's kind of where we're heading with the rest of this conversation is, well, what is out there to help people to get involved earlier? I'm sure we'll get to that. But my pathway in was basically out of disappointment and frustration at the current model. I wasn't impressed by the current model and I felt like there had to be a better way. And I jumped into education to learn how to, and one piece by one piece along the way, I've collected enough pieces to know this is the right way to help a child earlier. And it's the most natural and easiest way to help a child grow and develop so that you don't have to take out teeth and you don't have to have the unsuccessful pathway of braces that just really straighten your teeth temporarily.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you said that you don't remove teeth. Most dentists and most orthodontists that you see a child going through this process, they're asked to remove teeth at some point because there isn't enough room and they need to make the teeth straight. And how braces are more of a cosmetic teeth thing, they're straightening, but they're not doing anything to expand the palate, which I love that term, that expansive orthodontics. So, would you say, okay, so it started with frustration of not getting the results. We're seeing so much pain. And then it's led into focusing more on the airway, because, right, because there's more, it's more than just like there being enough room for the teeth. But if there's enough room for the teeth, there's also room for the tonsils and the adenoids, right?
Yes. So this process begins early, but then as time goes by, you learn more. Well, you start to recognize that, hey, it turns out the smaller jaw size with the crowded teeth wasn't the big problem. It turns out that the upper jaw, not only does it hold those teeth in that are crowded, the upper jaw is what builds our nasal chamber, our nose. So the upper jaw goes right up to the bottom of the eye, but it builds this. Now, when we breathe the air in our nostril, it enters a chamber that's the size of this. It's like a triangle. And that triangle shape, my thumbs are like the roof of the mouth. So if we're looking into the mouth, we see the roof of the mouth are my thumbs, but my two fingers are the side walls of my nose. And this is your maxilla up here. So a smaller maxilla delivers this shape in the nose, smaller nose, because the vault, we say the roof of the mouth or palate, vault goes higher. So when the vault goes higher, the walls come in. This is what the inside of the nose looks like when you have a smaller upper jaw. So if you see crowded teeth on top, what you really have underneath is a smaller triangle to breathe through because the maxilla makes the nose chamber. So now you're starting to talk about, well, wait, if my nose chamber is smaller, if I can't breathe well through my nose, automatically the mouth will open. Your body will open your mouth to get the air in your mouth. Supplementation, compensation is really what it is. So now the upper jaw is too small. We can't breathe well through our nose. But now not only is the upper jaw small, the lower is too, because when the muscles are weaker and our jaws don't grow and we see crowded teeth, we have both jaws too small. But now when the lower is too small, both jaws too small means there's not enough room for our tongue. So our tongue is the right size. The tongue is the right size. But when your teeth are crowded and your jaws are small, there's less room for it. But when we bite down, you know, our teeth are this shape like an arch. We have front teeth and we have side teeth. So front and side, which side teeth, sometimes we say back teeth. But if you're thinking about, we're going to talk about the tongue being in a prison. This prison that it's in, the bars are the teeth, and we have front teeth and side teeth or back teeth, but we don't have teeth at the back behind the tongue. That's the only open door. So basically, the tongue is in a cell that has three walls. The front wall is your front teeth, the two side walls are your back teeth, and the only place the tongue can go when you close is back. So biting your teeth together, we see our teeth, but it's your tongue that has to fit in that chamber. And when your teeth are together, closer or crowded, and your jaws are too small, your tongue has nowhere to go but back. So when we close our mouth, the tongue going back means, well, first of all, we struggled to get the air to go through our nose because that's too tiny. But now the tongue is further back, the air can't get behind it. So we have these two major obstacles to being a good nose breather, and that means now the mouth hangs open. And if the mouth is open and we're breathing through our mouth, that changes how our whole body runs, which we'll get to that next. But basically, the crowded teeth became a symptom that is a problem, but down the list, because when you affect the size of the nasal chamber and the tongue space, you really have a breathing problem. And having a breathing problem makes a sleeping problem, because we're supposed to breathe through our nose perfectly day and night. And if we don't breathe through our nose at night, we're going to be a different human being. We're going to have a poor quality of sleep. And that leads to symptoms during the day as well.
Yeah, man. I mean, it affects so many children. I see this. I mean, I saw this a lot when I was working in pediatrics, just how common it is to have for kids to have big tonsils, big adenoids, their mouth breathing, they're hanging it open, even while you're just sitting there and talking, not just while they're asleep. And so what would you say, why do we want to encourage nasal breathing?
So there's a big difference between nose and mouth breathing, and they're opposites. They're opposites. They're not both healthy. They're both good for you. A human being is an obligate nose breather, and mouth breathing is the like direct opposite of that. So the nose was built to prepare the air for the lungs. So when we breathe in our nose, that air gets filtered, cleaned, humidified, warmed, and it gets ingredients added to it. And there's this little injection of ingredient into the air called nitric oxide. And nitric oxide comes from the sinuses that are around, the paranasal sinuses are the fancy words for these little sinuses that are around your nasal chamber, but it injects nitric oxide into that air. Now, nitric oxide in the air that's going to eventually get into your lung, nitric oxide is kind of like the snowplow on the highway that's plowing the blizzard, and you're right behind it, so you're going to be safe. So the car's behind the plow is the nitric oxide, the cars, that's the oxygen coming into your lung. So the nitric oxide is leading the way into your lung. And what nitric oxide does, it's a fancy word called, it's a dilator. It makes things bigger. So when nitric oxide is in your air, what it does is it opens up all of the little tubules in your lung all the way to the end, so that the air behind it, the cars behind it, go all the way to the end. So the best way to make a good exchange in your lung is to use your whole lung and not to have it be tight or constricted. So the nitric oxide through the nose basically opens up the chambers all the way through. Then the air is going in easier into your lung for best exchange. So the lung is just an exchanger. It's going to bring the good stuff in and get the bad stuff out. We get good stuff in, bad. But the rate of exchange depends on how the air came in. If it comes through the nose, better rate of exchange because the nitric oxide clearing the way. Then, of course, better exchange means healthier human. Now, here's another pathway for nitric oxide to help us out. It's part of the immune system. So every time we inhale through our nose, the nitric oxide gets in the air. Nitric oxide is antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal. It's what sterilizes the air before it gets to the lung. So it should be no surprise that when you breathe through your nose, you will be healthier in the infection category because all those bugs are killed before they get anywhere near anything going, into your body. Sure enough, the mouth breathing. When you breathe in your mouth, well, we're not going to filter, warm, humidify, or clean that air. We're not going to sterilize it. We're not going to have any nitric oxide. So nitric oxide gets shut off when you breathe through your mouth. Now, all the little tubules in the lung are not wide open for us to get all the good air down there and exchange, but also we bring in every single bacteria, viral, fungal episode into the lung. And it should be no surprise there is pediatric medicine research that shows mouth breathers have higher rates of all of the ENT, ear, nose, throat, and lung infections compared to nose breathing children. So nose breathing children are healthier than mouth breathing children. One level past that, because it does affect how we sleep and our cognitive ability, there's research out there that shows nose breathing children have higher IQs than mouth breathing children. And when you're mouth breathing at night, it does take a toll on you cognitively because it changes how your brain is functioning at night. Switching gears to helping you breathe versus cleaning you and resetting you for the next day. So mouth breathing children are shown to have lower IQs than nose breathing children. And that research was done by Dr. Karen Bonnick, a beautiful researcher who did all this wonderful work to help us understand that poor breathing at night does affect you cognitively as well as behaviorally, both categories. So yes, the nose breathing and mouth breathing are opposites. A human being is an obligate nose breather and can only have health downstream from nose breathing. Once you start to mouth breathe, we lose the nitric oxide. We lose the immune system function of cleaning the air. And then there's a whole nother category of carbon dioxide to talk about. And I don't know if you want me to go that far down that rabbit hole of the poor breathing. Should I keep going on the carbon dioxide change?
Sure. I mean, I think it's helpful for parents to understand this because even as a provider, we were not taught this. I even did my master's program did a 2-week stint with dentistry because they wanted us to know that the mouth is connected to the body physical health. And I love that they were trying to connect those two, but it failed miserably in that, like, it really didn't connect anything, and it really wasn't able to show you how systemic health is impacted by our oral health and about our ability to nasal breathe. And so keep on going a little bit more about like how all of this matters, and then we'll go into like what this might look like a child that mouth breathes might have bedwetting or ADHD or other things like that, and so that parents can really apply it to their families.
So we think about the healthy child really needs to breathe through their nose to make sure we have proper balance of oxygen, carbon dioxide, and nitric oxide. So now, of course, oxygen, we'd like it to be at the highest level, 99 to 100% in the oxygen category. When we get to the nitric oxide, we talked about how we get that from nasal breathing. Otherwise, we don't get it in our system. So we have to breathe through our nose to get that into our system. Not only does the nitric oxide dilate the lungs for better exchanging, but as a dilator, it gets into the blood and it helps with the cardiovascular system. So fancy words for heart and vessels. So your arteries and your veins, if they're wide open, meaning dilated, thanks to having nitric oxide, your blood will flow better. Now, flow better means your heart works less. So for your heart to be the most efficient it can be, low heart rate, low blood pressure, but having excellent flow comes with the vessels being open or dilated, is our fancy word for wide open. Nitric oxide supports that. Without the nitric oxide, you start seeing constriction of the vessels, arteries, and veins. But when our arteries and veins are constricting or tighter, the heart has to work harder. Welcome to hypertension or higher blood pressure and higher heart rate, because now your heart has to work harder to move things through tinier tubes. So now you change the cardiovascular system by poor breathing. Now, mouth breathing, not only does it take away the nitric oxide and affect the lungs and the cardiovascular system, when we mouth breathe, it's excessive breathing. So now we're over breathing, and that dumps out too much of what we call the bad stuff. Carbon dioxide is supposed to be the, like, okay, that's the waste product. Let's exhale that. But you actually do need a certain level to maintain health. And that's what nose breathing does. It restricts the levels to be appropriate. High oxygen, a level of carbon dioxide that's appropriate, and appropriate nitric oxide. That's good balance. But if we mouth breathe, the carbon dioxide level goes much lower. We dump out too much of the bad stuff. So when you go too low with the carbon dioxide, it turns out carbon dioxide is also a dilator. Vessels wide open. But if you get rid of it, the vessels constrict. So mouth breathing takes away nitric oxide. It takes away carbon dioxide. And when you lose those two things, your entire vascular system, arteries and veins, is going to be tighter, constricted, making your heart work harder. So then you start seeing the higher heart rate and higher blood pressures in people who mouth breathe, or worse. And certainly that is very unhealthy, because downstream, that's going to lead to symptoms later on. You're changing the whole way that the blood is distributed around the body. We
Yeah.
should touch on the tonsils and adenoids. You had brought that up. I didn't get to it yet. Should I do a little bit on that?
Yeah.
Terrific. So we basically start out with the jaws are too small. We can't breathe well through our nose. We start to mouth breathe. This is the pathway to enlarging the tonsils and adenoids. It turns out most of the tonsil and adenoid overgrowth comes from mouth breathing. So mouth breathing, or poor breathing, is the cause of the tonsils and adenoids being enlarged. And then when they're bigger, it makes your breathing worse, as opposed to, oh, my tonsils and adenoids are big, my breathing is bad, now I'm unhealthy. It's the other way around. It wasn't that your tonsils and adenoids made you have a breathing problem. You had the breathing problem first, and then the mouth breathing delivers the excess size. With the tonsils and adenoids being bigger, then you have worse breathing. So it turns out, if you can correct the breathing from mouth breathing to nose breathing, it encourages the shrinkage of the tonsils and adenoids. So while mouth breathing created the size of them, getting a child to switch back to nose breathing can shrink them. And if you shrink the tonsils and adenoids, you have healed that child naturally. The alternative to that is removing the tonsils and adenoids. Well, if you take out the tonsils and adenoids, there's a pretty good chance the child is still going to be a mouth breather. And it turns out the odds are in favor of the child being a mouth breather after removing the tonsils and adenoids at a higher rate. So when you take out the tonsils and adenoids and the child remains a mouth breather, they grow back. So the mouth breathing is an irritant to that wound, because when that's taken out, you have a wound back there. And guess what? Breathing through the mouth is unclean, unfiltered air. And now it has irritation to the areas that were wounded to remove the structures, and they grow back. So it turns out there is some nice research that shows the tonsil adenoidectomy is only about 27% effective at solving an obstructive sleep apnea condition for a child. And the reason is, and this was done at the University of Stanford under Dr. Christian Guimeneau, he learned that nasal breathing is really the difference between the success of that or not. Meaning the kids who go into tonsil adenoidectomy, have them removed, and afterwards they stay nasal breathing, they don't grow back. So they stay healthy. But that was a small population. The larger percentage was the kids get their tonsils and adenoids out and they don't breathe through their nose. They still breathe through their mouth. 36 months later, they have OSA again or worse, same diagnosis or worse. So my experience over the 21 years and more in the last 10 where we're paying more attention to this is that children who come in at a certain age and have had their tonsils and adenoids out, well, their jaws are still small. So there's no room for the nose or tongue to breathe. So of course the content removal didn't make the jaws bigger. It just made the space a little better, but it's still undersized airway. Well, they breathe through their mouth. When we ask them to go back and check with the ENT, they're larger than they were the first time or the same size, and they have to have them out again. So the difference is this. When we have a child who has large tonsils and adenoids and we treat them, meaning let's grow the jaws, let's get back to nose breathing, they can shrink. But the child who has them removed and then we get to treat them, when we grow the everything and they start to breathe through their nose, they don't shrink for the second time. So they kind of have healed in such a bad way, they have to have them removed again. So we would rather them shrink naturally. My own kind of rate in the office is that about one or two kids out of 100 needs them out. So even though they're large, medium to large, our rate is one or two out of 100 get them out because the rest of the kids, we go after the jaw growth and development first. Get the jaws bigger, get the nose breathing, do the exercises. Once the nose is breathing, they shrink, you have healed. Whereas removing them doesn't really solve the problem. And there's a good explanation why that most people understand nice and easy is we have a small airway. The underdeveloped jaws give us our small airway. Then we get the compensated mouth breathing, making the tonsils and adenoids bigger. So the small airway, we'll call it like a straw. So if we have like a straw to breathe through, if we're breathing through a straw, let's consider a pixie stick. So everybody knows the candy, a pixie stick. It's a sugar tube. So it's a little tube filled with sugar. So if I have a pixie stick full of sugar and then I dump out the sugar, it doesn't make the straw bigger. It makes the straw empty. But the straw is not suitable to breathe through. So a child who has their tonsils and adenoids out, they have an underdeveloped or undersized airway because their jaws are too small. So it's very likely that that straw that is now empty, remove the contents. The contents weren't the cause of the problem. The contents being bigger were a symptom of the poor breathing. You got a small straw, you can't breathe through your nose. You can't breathe through your nose, you're a mouth breather. And that's why the success rate for tonsil adenoidectomy is so low, because the child can't be a nose breather. They never had the anatomy or airway to be a nose breather. So if you're going to be a mouth breather afterwards, it's a low success rate. We are not looking to take out the tonsils and adenoids on any child, but there are one or two per year out of 100 that do need it because they're so big and touching and I can't help those shrink. So we try, and then when they don't, we do ask the ENT to help us there. So the ENT becomes a supportive, collaborative care person that will help a child or two out of 100 in our office where we did everything we could. We have the right size to breathe through, but now the child has the tonsil adenoid not shrinking it, and they might need them out. So a very low rate. We're trying to protect those.
So for a child that's already had their tonsil adenoids out, for those parents, I know they hear stuff like that and they're like, oh my goodness, we went through this. What, I mean, you would say, I would say to still see if you can get your palate expanded and still see if you can do myofunctional therapy, right? Would that be a solution for them even after a tonsil and adenoid removal?
Absolutely. Yeah, when we're taking the histories of the children and we learn that they had their tonsils and adenoids out at a certain age, when we ask the parent, how did it go? Tell us about it. They do say like 6 to 9 months, there was some better breathing, like they noticed an improvement. But once you get past 1 year, it started fading back. And the nice research shows about 36 months post tonsil adenoidectomy with mouth breathing, they'll grow back. And then you have the same credentials of poor breathing. So the parents describe this most of the time. This is the description. The breathing did improve. The symptoms got a little better, but then over time they came back. So we feel like we're in the same spot. Now we know, okay, we have undersized jaws. We have a bad airway. The last thing you want to do is take those tonsils and adenoids out again. So you got to go after the cause. So we want the jaw growth and development. We want the tongue space. We want the nasal chamber bigger so they can breathe. We want the frenums released if they do have a tongue or lip tie. We do want the myofunctional therapy. Combining all of this, if that child can heal and have no symptoms and be healthy, terrific. You don't go take them out. But it has been my experience that some of those kids who have had them out once do need them out a second time because they come in very angry and interrupt the airflow. And so it does happen where they have to get them out a second time. It's always unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, I would say as a parent, I would be a little upset with that, 'cause that's a big surgery to recover
Yeah.
from as well. I think that it's important for parents to know, just how pervasive this issue is, how it may not have been as big of an issue even 100 years ago, 75 years ago, and we started seeing this. What would you say you would like, what would your piece of advice be to a parent of a young child to encourage good jaw development?
Yes. So the fascinating part about this is the anthropology research. And so now I've kind of become a student of anthropology over the last 21 years to learn where this problem came from. Why do almost every child we see has the crowded teeth and a bad bite? Because think about it the other way. When was the last time we ever met a child and followed a child that grew up and had all of their teeth go where they belong, didn't need braces, had a perfect bite, and then when they were 20, their wisdom teeth came in and they had 32 teeth? That's like a unicorn. We call that a unicorn in our office because we don't meet children like that. We see crowded teeth, bad bites, smaller jaws. So we reach out to the anthropology community, we take classes, we start learning from incredible people out there who've done research and compiled it all. And so there is a short answer to why the jaws are smaller. And it has a lot to do with the diet. And it is the fastest, shortest answer is early soft food. So early soft food is really the trigger for the muscles to be weaker and then the jaws not to grow. So here's how this works. In cultures that are pre-industrial or pre-Western living, they have what's called a natural diet, but they transition from breastfeeding to hard food. And so the earlier food in that infant and small child's life is a harder, a consistency, tougher to chew on. Well, going from breastfeeding to harder food is what the entirety of the human race has done up until industrial Western living. So having the hard diet early, and it begins between 6 and 9 months old, the muscles are used more with, strength developing, the bone develops. So turns out your jaws, your upper and lower jaw, are very susceptible to muscle activity and muscle use. So with early hard food, your muscles are going to be stronger. And when your muscles are stronger and working harder, your bones grow better. And when your bones grow better, your teeth land where they belong and you get all 32. So when you talk about the fancy word malocclusion or bad bite, crowded teeth and a bad bite, it doesn't really exist in humans prior to the few hundred years ago where it starts and then it grows. So when you think about the rate of growth of malocclusion, it basically shows up in just one generation of starting to use softer food. And then it's about 50% of the population. It grows to 70, 85, 90 over the generations. But by fourth, fifth generation, better than 90% of the kids will have underdeveloped jaws. And early soft food is basically in mush. The mush that we use generally across the population is right after breastfeeding, we're introducing mush, blended, pureed. We do all the good stuff. We go get the vegetables, but we put them in the blender. We make it a puree. Well, it turns out a puree doesn't require musculature. So use it or lose it. If we don't use our muscles, they deteriorate or atrophy, but they become weaker. The muscles will stay at the level you use them. If you go to the gym and you lift a 1 pound weight all the time, you can only achieve a certain amount. It's going to be muscle weakness. If you go to the gym and you work the weights up and you go to the highest weights, you get big muscles, you get use of muscles appropriately, you can grow better. But we use our muscles on mush early. Well, that doesn't promote the jawbone growth. So it turns out this section of our face, the upper and lower jaws, primarily grow by the muscle activity. So when we transition to softer foods, weaker muscles, smaller jaws, crowded teeth, smaller airway, symptoms downstream. Whereas every culture, pre-industrial, pre-Western living, has fully developed jaws, 32 teeth, and the same bite. Uniformity. There's no variable. There's no crowded, crazy teeth. And the skulls, all pre-industrial, pre-Western, basically have beautiful, healthy development with beautiful teeth. And they don't have the crowded teeth and the bad bites because of the early hard diet. Then there's, the pathway into industrial Western living where the soft diet is almost everyone now. So almost every child gets the puree and most of the jaw growth occurs from 0 to 2. So when you're thinking about the jaw growth and development, what are the percentages over time? 54%, the majority of jaw growth and development is 0 to 2. And that's the prime years for the softer food. Softer food, weaker muscles, we lose an ability to grow. The second biggest increment is 2 to 4. 2 to 4 tacks on another like 15%. So all of a sudden, a 4-year-old is at 70%, roughly 70% jaw growth and development. And from 0 to 4 is the softer diet. Now, generally, the Western diet is softer all the way through, but the early is such a puree mush. It's like a liquid diet. Liquid diet doesn't use the muscles, doesn't grow the bones. And here we are in our hiccup. How do you help parents early? Well, there's a fantastic book that we recommend to our patients called Baby-Led Weaning. Baby Led Weaning by Jill Rapley and Tracy Marquette on Amazon. It's a $12 book. It basically is how to introduce solid foods to your infant. It's an instruction manual on how to get back to a more natural way to feed an infant. And that pathway could lead you to better jaw growth and development. But we see the kids from three on, and at three, it's already evident. And what do you see in a 3-year-old is baby teeth that are together. There's no space. But prior to industrial Western living, all of the baby teeth had gaps. So space is in the baby teeth, you're on the right direction. The baby teeth together, oh boy, here comes the big crowding. So that's the baby-led weaning is the best opportunity I have to help parents kind of start reading about and heading in the direction of introducing solid food earlier with a solid technique.
Yeah, I as a parent, as a my youngest, really, she was like a gagger, and she has that small jaw and that the poor development, and it's hard. I think if you surround yourself with a lot of resources and a lot of people that can help educate on how to really introduce these foods, the safe way to do it. If you think about it, I mean, 100 years ago, they didn't have blenders pureeing foods. And so we really have to, or maybe it was like 150 years ago, we really have to get back to that where we're actually giving our babies and our kids like real food. I think that's the one of the biggest things that I would do differently if I, could go back again and do it again. I would say we're going to stick with this until we can figure out how to get real food into her, instead of purees. And so I do think that that's a big help. I think that can be a big help. And then sticking with like whole foods and not all the processed foods, which as a dentist, we always encourage, you would always encourage that, like not having a bunch of sugary foods.
And certainly nutrition plays a role in a lot of things. And I think most people are aware that there is such a thing as a healthy diet, and there are healthier foods, and then there are not so healthier foods. And everybody knows the unhealthy stuff tastes great, and who doesn't want fast food every now and then, or candy and things that are less healthy but tasty. But meanwhile, the processing and the alteration of it makes for a less healthy product. And so trying to stay in that natural category, and not only natural, the healthy things that are good to eat, also in their natural consistency. Don't blend it up, because the puree is then the physical form. The consistency is what delivers the real change in the muscles and the bone growth. And the anthropology research really culminates in one massive conclusion, in that crowded teeth, bad bites, jaw is mostly acquired. It's an acquired condition, not a genetic condition. It doesn't mean something's genetic when your grandparent had it, your parent had it, and the child has it. Just because 3 generations show something doesn't mean it's in your genes. Your environment is the same as these people, because the kids today are 7th and 8th generation post-industrial Western living. So the kids today we look at are 7, 8 generations into the early soft food. So their parents had crowded teeth and bad bites. Their parents, meaning the grandparents, had crowded teeth and bad bites. The great grandparents had crowded teeth and bad. So when you go back to the great grandparents of the kids today, the malocclusion rate was 90% in our country. So they have 90% rates. So basically, you have this overwhelming rate of malocclusion, crowded teeth and bad bites in the kids today. But just because each generation has something doesn't mean it's in the genes. That's an inappropriate way to reference something as, oh, each generation has it, it's in your genes. No, malocclusion is not a genetic condition. It is overwhelmingly and primarily an acquired, or fancy word is epigenetic, outside of your gene type of condition. It's an environmental influence. Oh, you're on mute.
What would it look like if a typical child coming into your office, that what would you see? They might have ADHD, they might have they might have a lot of cavities. What does that typically look like in your office or in the virtual
Yeah, the
program?
symptom list is long, and we do start asking about these things, because it is appropriate to learn about the struggles. Look, a dental office, when they meet a new patient, they take a medical and dental history. So you take a medical and dental history. Now, generally, we're not treating medical conditions. Like, we might take a medical history because we have to know if our adult patients have heart conditions or are taking medications. We're not treating their cardiovascular disease, but we have to know that history. With a child, it's similar. We're taking the whole history, so we learn what are the struggles. And there's a long list of things that are symptoms that children and parents struggle with. So at the top of the list is behavior, ADHD behavior, then bedwetting, certainly nightmares, night terrors, ear infections, digestive issues, night sweats, waking at night, not being able to sleep through the whole night, restless sleep. And then you've got, I think I said ear infections already, but basically, there's this long list of symptoms, and we're asking a lot of these questions so we can learn about What are the struggles at home? Because if you learn about these symptoms, we don't treat any of these symptoms, but we understand that there's research out there that we can rely on that says there's a pathway where connecting these dots might happen. So what we do is we then diagnose in our category, in our lane. So I diagnose the jaws. So it's easy to diagnose underdeveloped jaws or malocclusion. There are even fancy words, craniofacial deficiency. We can go from the normal words to the fancy words in all these categories. But when you see baby teeth that are together, you have underdeveloped jaws. You have early childhood malocclusion. When you see crowded teeth, you have malocclusion. Well, I diagnose malocclusion because I can treat malocclusion. What I recognize is that when the jaws are small, it does affect the airway, the ability to breathe well through the nose. And if we don't breathe well through our nose, if we're mouth breathing or worse when we're sleeping, well, then we could turn towards research that like Dr. Karen Bonnick has done. Dr. Karen Bonnick did research that showed back in 2012, she published this. She followed 11,000 children for 6 years to learn that number one, there was a correlation between mouth breathing or worse, poor breathing, and their sleeping credentials to their behavior the next day. So now we have this connection of, yeah, poor behavior or behavioral symptoms that are in the neurobehavioral category of attention deficit hyperactivity type of style descriptions are related to the manner in which we breathe and sleep. So that's out there. In her research, she was IQ testing the children. And in IQ testing the children, that's where she was one of the ones who came up with and learned the children who are mouth breathing or worse. And when I say mouth breathing or worse, I mean some kids worse than mouth breathing would be like snoring all night. And worse than snoring is pausing, holding your breath. That's apnea, the fancy word apnea, when the kids actually gasp or hold their breath. So mouth breathing, snoring, apnea, like worse, worse. Well, the kids who have mouth breathing or worse had lower IQs than the kids who were nose breathers. So she started noticing that there's a cognitive, connection here too, because if you're mouth breathing or worse, you will have a cognitive impairment and the developmental years are 0 to 6. 0 to 6 are the developmental years. So why would we work on a child at 7, 8, 9, or 10 when we had the opportunity earlier, which it all adds up to earlier treatment is better. But yes, the connections are all there. How about things like, well, we talked about the behavior a little bit. Ear infections. I mean, ear infections are quite common. So we recognize that, okay, parents will tell us about how many ear infections and maybe ear tubes, things like this. I don't treat ear infections, just like I don't treat behavior and I don't treat bedwetting. But I re okay, jaw development. Well, the jaws are undersized because the muscles haven't been functioning properly. They're weakened, not functioning properly. It turns out when we do grow the jaws a little bit better and we start to breathe better and our muscles are behaving properly, the child gets less ear infections. So then you start to dig further and further and you learn, well, it turns out that you, if the fluid drains nicely, then you have this opportunity to avoid ear infections. But when you have the fluid sitting in there, all of a sudden, when the fluid sits in there, it stays for too long, you get an ear infection. Well, it turns out there's a particular muscle that helps the eustachian tube open to drain the fluid. And you learn when you dig enough that the eustachian tube is always in a closed position and it opens by proper swallowing. So a proper compression swallow to the roof of the mouth with a vacuum swallow, that's when this opens. And there's one muscle that does it. It's a fancy name, tensor valley palatini. Tensor valley palatini. It's a cute little muscle. But when we swallow with compression to the roof of the mouth, a perfect swallow makes that muscle contract. And when that little muscle contracts, the tube opens, the fluid comes out. So basically, an early soft diet delivers a low functioning tongue. And a low functioning tongue, a drinker of a tongue, doesn't function properly. That muscle doesn't fire. The tube doesn't open. The fluid sits. Ear infections are basically the result of a poor, dysfunctional swallowing pattern. And the moment we can get the swallowing pattern correct, the ear infections fade away. So I treat underdeveloped jaws and I use myofunctional therapy as well. I make a lot of referrals. And it turns out with proper tongue space and a proper swallow, the children we treat don't get ear infections anymore. Doesn't mean I treat ear infections. It's a symptom that fades away by treating the underlying cause.
Would you say you see a lot of food sensitivities? Because I mean, I know we've talked a lot on here, like dairy being a big factor
Yes.
in some ear infections too.
Yes. So, and there's a yes, there are more pieces to the puzzle of everything that can be causing inflammation. And certainly inflammation is at the root of a lot of things. And it does tend to be the dairy category affects a lot of kids negatively. And if you don't have a big reaction to something, then your norm, the low level of inflammation you deal with every day becomes your normal. You don't even know that dairy is bothering you. But it's a recommendation for some parents to see a nutritionist, work with the diet as well, And we do learn over time that it turns out when you reduce or eliminate the dairy from the diet, that kid has less inflammation and they do breathe better. So there's a pathway where inflammation reduces your airway and your breathing ability. So yes, the nutritional category jumps in there too. So like a hierarchy of the things, because it is a collaborative effort to heal a child. I'm going to work on my role, which is I got to get these jaws bigger. So I've got this pathway, get the jaws bigger. Then I've got the myofunctional therapist. They're going to help the muscles. They're going to do all the work with the muscles. Then after that, there's a long list of people, chiropractor, craniosacral, osteopath, speech language pathology, body workers, all the people who can help redirect proper muscle function for growth and development, posture. All of this is wound together, and not in the least of which would be the nutritionist, because in the nutritional category, yes, there's healthy food, there's unhealthy food, but some people don't know that they're actually having a problem processing a food. It's become their normal. And yet, yeah, that's a real thing. The dairy's a problem for some kids.
It is. It is. Okay, so you have this child come in that they're in that time frame where that age range where it's like it's we need to get on this. Like we need to fix this. I mean, this was my children a few years ago. They both had shark teeth coming in, and shark teeth is where the teeth come in behind. The adult teeth come in behind the baby teeth. They both did. And thankfully they are both totally corrected now. And one with the tooth pillow and one with a palate expander. Because she had I didn't actually know about the tooth pillow at the time. But she had a palate expander and it did work. It had a lot, we had a lot of I would say issues along the way. It definitely was hard on her body, and we had to support her body in a lot of ways. But it was it did work. And so, what would you say for like a 5-year-old, 6-year-old comes into your office, has the shark teeth, might have some cavities? What would you say you would typically want to do?
Yes. So from 3 to 7 is a wonderful age for the guidance appliances. And so 3 to 7, I tend not to use the fixed expanders in that category. So we go after a number of things. And number one would be the guidance appliances that we use. And the child will wear them for 1 to 2 hours in the evening plus bedtime. Number two is going to be nasal hygiene. We basically teach every patient how to do better nasal hygiene. So we ask a child to blow their nose. We're going to teach them how to do that. We want to blow our nose really well. We're going to introduce natural or holistic nasal sprays that you can use. The clear products are okay. You can use simple saline. Anything that is natural is good because we do need to do it multiple times a day, and we don't want to be dosing with the bad stuff multiple times a day. So blow your nose, spray your nose, blow your nose every hour on the hour until you get, and while you're at home, until you get that nose more clean and clear for better breathing. So nasal hygiene, guidance appliances, myofunctional therapy. And the myofunctional therapy we refer. So I don't do it in my office. I have enough of those colleagues around me. I can send them to someone. So we refer to the myofunctional therapist, where the child will work with them. And basically, it's the big fancy words for physical therapy of the head and neck. Because when you're poorly breathing, it changes your entire head and neck. Compensation is a bad thing for a human being. And all of this is compensating for poor breathing. So we got to rework all the muscles of the head and neck. And that's where the myofunctional therapist comes into play. Some of these kids need frenum revisions, or they have a tight lip or a tight tongue. And once the myofunctional therapy is doing their work, we can determine if that's really necessary.
But that would be, you would say that would be. Maybe after, if they still have a release or they still have a tongue tie or a lip tie when they come in your office, you would kind of go after the palate expansion first and then maybe do it a release because in what my the airway orthodontist that I went to go see with my oldest, he said, no, we make room in the palate for the tongue first and then we release. And I had never heard that before. And I was like, that makes sense to me.
Yes, I'm a big fan of that. So basically, if the tongue has a tongue tie or some sort of restriction, right? Well, this whole garage that it's living in is too small. So we're going to release that tongue and we're going to give it permission to go everywhere and then try to train it to go everywhere, but it doesn't have the right, it's not living in the right size chamber yet. So I prefer to do the growth first. So whether it's the guides and the myofunctional therapy and the kids 3 to 7 or 8 to 12, we use a fair amount of fixed expanders. Get the size first. But as soon as we get out of the fixed expanders, right to the myofunctional therapist to get their work in to kind of gain the release, because no child should really have just releases of those things without preparatory exercising. So the myofunctional therapist is going to work for a month or two with that child preparing for the release, then the release. So our sequence of events is that if you're in the guides, you can go right to myofunctional therapy because the guide is removable. So 3 to 7, they start with the myofunctional therapist immediately. Let's say 8 to 12, we have a small percentage of kids who go expanders. Well, if we put expanders, That interferes with the myofunctional therapist. It's hard to do the work when the tongue has another
Yeah.
obstacle. So what
I
we do is we
tried.
pull.
I
Yeah, we
tried
pull off.
when she had the experience.
Yeah.
And you can't make
It's
a tongue
hard.
cave. You
Yeah.
can't do any of it to get that up there,
Right.
tongue up there.
So exactly. So what we do is, okay, well, let's take the few months to grow the jaws. Use the expanders. Now, once they're the right size, we got to get those out of the way. So then we take the expanders away and we give the child a guide, because now they can have a guidance appliance that helps with the breathing, the musculature, all the balance we want, while they go right to the myofunctional therapist to begin the training of the muscles. Now that the size is right, we've caught up, but we have to address the muscles to get the balance we need for more growth and development, because it is a child who should be getting bigger over time. So right to the myofunctional therapist, and we let the myofunctional therapist determine when is the right time for the release, because some kids in a few weeks' time, they can have the exercises appropriate to do the release, and some need a couple of months of work before getting the releases. So then, yeah, that's the only time we pause the myofunctional therapy, is going into fixed expanders. Let's get those in and achieve our goals, then move on to the therapy right after it.
What about an infant who had a tongue tie release done? Do you see that often needing to be redone?
Well, if it's early enough and then the breastfeeding is successful, that is the physical therapy. Because once you have, if let's say you can't, if there's difficulty, if breastfeeding is unsuccessful, then you realize, oh my goodness, the tongue is tied or restricted, so it can't compress to make, you know, the proper vacuum. The release can deliver successful breastfeeding. Well, the breastfeeding will be the action on the tongue. That's the therapy that can have it basically heal appropriately. So if we're past the window of the breastfeeding, 2 years, 3 years old, if we're past the breastfeeding window, then there are manipulation exercises, because you could still do the release and make an improvement. But myofunctional therapists, some of them can work with the 1, 2-year-old, 3-year-olds. But then there are also lactation consultants. There are body workers. There are people who can do it for you, meaning the parent gets taught, or they do the manipulation for the heel, because sometimes a 2-year-old can't just do the exercise. Like, oh, raise your tongue, do all these exercises to promote the proper healing. So depending upon what was done, there are cases where the frenum made an improvement, but maybe it wasn't released all the way. And so if you have to go back and touch it up, it's not a bad thing. It's just about what's the level of function you need to be perfectly healthy.
I would say I love that you said that, because if you're able to get breastfeeding as a possibility, because a lot of moms, it's just, I mean, they are just struggling so much, and then they can get them to a place where it's they're thriving, they're doing well nursing, then that will be the actual palate expander, because that, I mean, that is the that's what God intended. Like it helps
Yes.
grow the jaw, and then you add on real foods, and I truly feel like if we can get more
Yeah.
moms nursing, and this is not a shade to any mom that had to formula feed, I totally get it. Like it is hard, and a lot of times there's no support system around. Like you don't
No.
have even some lactation consultants and people who are doing the releases, all you don't always get the best support. And
Yeah.
so it is something it is really hard in the moment. And so if that is you, don't feel any guilt or shame about that. Know that like you can still have a great success by getting the right team around you now. But if you can breastfeed, that is the best way to get that palate expand, that natural palate expansion.
The tongue is the jaw grower, and so it's the breastfeeding that trains it to function by compression up and then a vacuum swallow, that, you know, that beautiful technique that basically promotes all of the outward push of the jaws, so you get the beautiful growth early. But my wife had to go back to work after 12 weeks, so it was, your job is here if you come back in 12 weeks, but it's not if you don't. So she had to go back to work, and that's just what it was. And she had worked very hard to get that career. And so she went back to work in 12 weeks, and we did the bottles and we did the formula and we did what we had to do. And of course, my kids were put into treatment at 5 years old, because, you know, they're 23 and 22 and 17. But going back, I had just started. I knew at 5 years old, well, they look terrible. Their teeth and their bite is awful. I gotta fix this. So I started working on them early. And yeah, they had both, the two older ones managed to avoid braces. They don't have any braces. The third one is 17, never had braces. Two older ones have wisdom teeth in. So like you grow the jaws earlier and redirect everything, and you're in a great spot.
I love
But
that you said that about wisdom teeth. So that's a common question I get, and I'm like,
yes.
ideally, yes, you would have the room, the space, and they would come in, and they wouldn't hurt. They're
Yep.
supposed to be there. There's a reason that they come in,
Yeah.
but it's really common that they do hurt. And then what do you do if they're coming in and they're starting to hurt?
Yeah, so wisdom teeth that are coming in and causing trouble, it's probably appropriate to take them out, because if they're going to damage the gum, the bone, or the teeth next to them, then there are reasons to remove them. So I'm not anti-wisdom tooth extraction. However, I am pro growth and development early to allow for the proper size of the jaw to come in. So I look at it this way. If I knew my aunt was going to leave me 32 Ferraris in her will, and then say, and here's an amount of money to build a garage for those Ferraris, Ben, I would not build a garage for 28 cars. I would build a garage for 32 cars. I know they're coming. Well, guess how many teeth are coming? It's not a secret. There are 32 teeth coming. So all you have to do is grow the jaw size to accommodate 32. So I can tell you my experience, because it's not research. My office experience is a clinical office where I've practiced for 21 years doing growth and development, and I'm better than 50% of the kids I treat have their wisdom teeth in. They have 32. So when I teach nationally, I go all around and I ask communities, what's your wisdom tooth extraction rate around here? And the docs will say, 70%, 80%, 90%. High numbers. Wisdom teeth are being extracted at very high rates, and you
Oh,
can
sweet.
ask around and learn super high rates. Well, our goal is really to have a full 75%, 3 out of 4 come in, and I'm well over 50. I'm getting there. And we believe this year I could probably say confidently 75. And I start talking about this with the parent, because if we do have the opportunity to get the jaw size right, well, then you can fit the teeth. So the biggest difference between having the wisdom teeth come in or not is the jaw size. But in my world, discovering this over time was the younger I get to meet and work on the child, the better. So the child who's 3 to 7, I have a better chance because I can get that bigger. I haven't missed as much growth and development. 8 and above, it's much harder, and 10 and above, even harder. So if the older the child comes in, the harder it is to get the jaw size to accommodate the wisdom teeth. The good news is no child ends up with less than 28. In other words, we don't take out the bicuspids on any child ever. So it doesn't matter if you're 16 and you weren't treated and you had the most severe crowding you've ever seen in your life. We can grow those jaws and have those teeth fit and have 28. So we never extract baby teeth. A subtractive technique is only going the wrong way. So it's a bad choice for parents to extract baby teeth so the permanent teeth fit in better. Now, the difference, like you mentioned, when the baby tooth is there and the permanent tooth is behind it, that baby tooth should come out. So the
That,
baby tooth in front, that one
and
comes
we
out.
did do that. We ha I
What I
did
mean
redo
is,
one baby tooth.
I
And
mean a
to be
different
honest, we
tattoo.
had to, like, it was to in order to get the palate expander in. And I was okay with it because it was already loose and it was a baby tooth. And so that is one thing where it's like that, I get that question a lot too, but it's different than removing an adult tooth.
Yes, and it's different than removing the baby teeth on the sides. In other words, you have these four new teeth have come in. So the 5 or 6 year old gets four teeth on the bottom. The four incisors are here, but the four incisors are here and they're very crowded. So what a lot of offices will do is they'll take out the baby canine. That's the next tooth in line. But the baby canine coming out at 7 or 8, that new tooth doesn't come till 11. So when you take out the baby canines, that's the teeth on the sides of the four front teeth. Guess what? The four front teeth spread out. They look better. But you've taken away, you're missing six baby teeth. You have four permanent teeth. That's a bad recipe. That's going the wrong way. So we do not extract the teeth on the sides of the permanent teeth to make them fit in. Only the one that's stacked up like a shark row. That's okay, but not on the sides. That's a subtractive technique that is not going to help out. More of those kids land when they get their permanent teeth coming. They don't fit because we're kicking the can down the road. So they have to go ahead and take out the bicuspids because they're treating the teeth, not the foundation. So extracting the baby teeth on the sides is an absolute no. Parents should look for other opinions. And the best advice I could say is, don't let anyone extract any teeth until you really research and figure it out, because we have not extracted any teeth in 21 straight years, and offices that I have taught have not extracted any teeth. You should always have 28 minimum, and the earlier you can help your child, the more likely you'll have 32. And our experience in the office has been working with the child earlier to grow the jaws, get the breathing and the muscles all correct, gives us the opportunity to breathe better, sleep better, and then we notice symptoms fade away. The bedwetting goes away, the ear infections go away, the night terrors go away, the behavior changes, so much so that in our office, kids have come off medication. So we have a very nice history of kids coming off medication, because if the symptoms are no longer there that they're on the medication for, well, then there's no need for that medicine. So we have a very long history of having children heal in categories that are symptoms while we're treating the diagnosis of jaw development in our category. It turns out they heal by breathing through the nose better and sleeping better. So that wonderful opportunity led to where we are today, which is I'm doing this in my own practice and it's local. So it's local and our team, we're all feeling good because, you know, somebody was bedwetting, now they're not. Somebody was taking a medication, now they're not. Someone was a C student and having tutors and struggling in school, now they're an A student and they have no tutors. And like all these little things add up to this is pretty nice, but the bigger picture is we recognize there are no children developing beautifully anymore. It doesn't exist with the early soft diet. And with all of this going on around the country, how do you bring this to more people? So I started to teach other offices, but now you have an office here and there using these techniques, and it's very few and far between. When someone finds me and what I do, and then they want to do it somewhere else, and they look around, well, their community doesn't have it. So that's kind of how Tooth Pillow was born, was a need, an access. How do we give parents access to have kind of care choices from 3 to 12, as opposed to just waiting and addressing the teeth later, which addressing the teeth, you had even mentioned it before. When you only try to force the teeth straight with braces, it doesn't do anything for the jaw growth and development. So it makes no difference for the breathing.
And it
You're
can be
not going to be better
restrictive,
breathing.
right?
Your braces straighten your teeth, but they don't make anything bigger. So you don't get wider. You don't get jaw growth and development. You don't get tongue space. You don't get nasal chamber change. So all these things going into it's just a cosmetic technique in the end. And now we want to give this to more adults for their children to look at and say, well, it's a good choice for my family. Let me sign up. So Tooth Pillow was born to solve for access, meaning you don't have an office near you that does this. We can do it remotely. So we built a platform that we could treat almost every single 3 to 7 year old we meet, with rare exception, through Tooth Pillow. So 3 to 7, almost all of them. And that would be a guidance appliance. So we can size now with photographs, we can size photos and clever rulers we've made. We can size these appliances so we can send them to the parent directly. We built an app that a parent can be connected to us, and we have support team that does daily, weekly, monthly support. We also have doctors who are called treatment providers that are overseeing each state that we have built out. We have providers that have learned to do this and want to participate to help people. So they're in there monitoring the care over time. And basically the parents now have access to three things remotely: the guidance appliance that they can do, the nasal hygiene support techniques and tools that get their nose clean and clear. And the third is the myofunctional therapy via an app. So through an app, you can do myofunctional therapy via Zoom. And we have, you know, at the start of it now, we have Laura Eckhart, we have Brittany Murphy in there. We have two, you know, world-class myofunctional therapists, but we're building out a bigger team so that we can actually do the myofunctional therapy. And when you combine the guide, myofunctional therapy, and nasal hygiene, those are three powerful things that help redirect breathing, muscles, and teeth bite and jaw growth. So yes, we can do this remotely, 3 to 7, almost all children. It's the 8 to 12 group. All of a sudden, from 8 to 12, we're a little bit older. We have a shorter time frame. So I can't treat them all. Not every child from 8 to 12 is a candidate for Tooth Pillow. However, it is the majority that is. So about 3 out of 4 kids from 8 to 12 can use Tooth Pillow successfully. But 1 out of 4 kids needs expanders. Like your child had an expander. 1 out of 4 kids, I screen them and I see like, oh yeah, this poor child is 9 years old and I know Tooth Pillow isn't enough. Then sadly, we have to use the word deny. We're denying Tooth Pillow, but we try to write a note. Your child would benefit from expanders, and we're going to try to connect you with an office near you that does beautiful expander technique. So you have the chance to catch up. Once you catch up, you can go into the guides after the expanders and have that. So
What I'm
there's a
doing with my oldest.
percentage. Exactly.
And
Do
it
the
helps prevent
expanders.
that relapse.
Yes, because when expanders come out, if you know, basically expanders get your foundation to the right size, but they don't change the muscle activity. So if the muscle activity is still poor, then when the expanders come out, they could shrink back. So we see this a lot. Parents who've had an expander for their child at age 7 or 8 or 9, but they come in at 11 and they say, we think it went back or it doesn't look any better. It did go back. The research shows an expander with nothing after it really just shrinks back. So the point is, if we get you to an office to get expanders, great. You get your expanders. Now you're caught up. But what you really need after that for the stability and the continued growth wider and forward is the muscle work. That's where the myofunctional therapy comes in and our guides. So Tooth Pillow after an expander, when you wear your guide, it does three things. One, nasal breathing. It's going to promote the nasal breathing because it's in your mouth. Now you got the block, you got to get your nose breathing. Second thing it's going to do is it retrains the tongue to function to the roof of the mouth. So when the guide is in place, you can only swallow appropriately. Your tongue will go up and compress to the vault and swallow correctly. So the guide alone starts to retrain the tongue to swallow. And when your tongue is working up and down like a piston with compression, your jaws grow this way. So the tongue is the grower of the jaws naturally. We just want to get it back. So we help with that. Then the guide also, it gets between the lips and the teeth. So it has a flange. When you put it in and you close your mouth over it, it pushes your lips and cheeks away from the teeth. So they're not acting to squeeze you in. Because when the tongue is doing its job badly, it turns out the lips and cheeks compensate, take advantage of this. They work harder. When they're working harder, well, now the inside is weaker, the outside gets stronger. We grow the wrong way. Crowded teeth. This is the explanation for why the teeth relapse after braces. When you have braces, it's because your teeth were crowded. When your teeth were crowded, because your jaws didn't grow right, your muscles are wrong. When you get your teeth straight with the braces and you take them away without a retainer, the muscles are still wrong. The inside is weak, the outside is strong. Inside weak, outside strong, collapse the teeth. That's why the teeth go back to crowded. It's not because your genes make you go back to crowded. It's because your muscles are making you go back to the original position that they put you in the first place. So we want to, right after expanders, get the guides in the myofunctional therapy going to retrain the muscles to do appropriate work and function, get the nose breathing, and get the exercises going and any frenum releases that are needed. So when all your muscles are right, you're balanced, you keep going forward, you keep going forward, wider and forward. So your tongue will do all that work, keep growing you all the way to your wisdom teeth is the goal. We really want to have 32 teeth in every child. We're fighting hard for that. We're above 50%. We're cruising towards 75. That's probably what it might be the peak of it, but whatever it is, I'll take it because I can't meet everybody at 3. The problem is I meet some kids at 12. And if you come in at 12, I don't have as good a chance for the wisdom teeth.
Right. Okay, so that is what Tooth Pillow is. It is a virtual program that provides access because this is the problem that, I mean, most people have. I was looking at an Alf appliance for my youngest to expand her palate, but I was gonna have to drive 3 hours every 4 to 6 weeks. And there's nothing wrong with Alf. I'm not saying that. I am saying I didn't have access. I didn't have it close to me where it was
Yes.
gonna be a feasible part of our lifestyle. So this is when I found out about Tooth Pillow, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing, because I needed a gentle technique for her, who and so this has been truly just, I mean, amazing. Like the changes I've seen in her mouth, there is space between her teeth now. There, I mean, her behavior, she's sleeping deeper and better and longer. I mean, it has been, and we've only been in it for 3 months. It truly, like, it's shocking, like how much has changed in that short amount of time. And so I will say not every parent is going to see that, especially like a 9-year-old that's in the Tooth Pillow. It might be a little bit slower, but it is still possible, and it's still amazing that you can also address mouth breathing when you're doing this, because the Tooth Pillow will sit in there and you aren't mouth breathing anymore.
Oh, yeah, it's a wonderful opportunity and access was the number one thing. Just like you mentioned, Alf is a wonderful appliance. And I have parents write to me all the time. The nearest Alf provider is 4 hours away. They can't do it physically. You've got three, four kids,
It's just
school,
hard. It's a lot.
home. Who could do it? There's a number of techniques that are wonderful, but less offices use growth and development early. So they're few and far between. Parents might find them and realize 4 hours, 6 hours, different state altogether. So access, because we know number one, I'll say I believe every child is underdeveloped because the early soft diet is just ubiquitous. It is everywhere. I don't see children growing into their teeth and getting their wisdom teeth on their own. I have no example of that happening ever in my 31 years. A child that grew up and had 32 teeth, all where they belong and no symptoms, perfectly healthy human being. That's 7, 8 generations ago. We had that opportunity. So here we were in this world where if they're all underdeveloped and having this problem, well, we got to work earlier. But if no one's around to do this and parents can't be traveling 4 to 6 hours to do other techniques that are in office, there has to be a minimum. There has to be a minimum that's available to redirect. And that's what Tooth Pillow was born into, was access for anyone, anywhere, guides plus myofunctional therapy plus nasal hygiene instruction and support can give a child a chance over time to redirect themselves to be in a better place going forward. And then you have affordability is a whole nother level because,
Oh, well, yeah, that's a whole
oh,
other conversation, because I paid a
so,
lot of money for my daughter's palate expanders, and it was a lot more than Tooth Pillow. I mean, it is a big cost. And I had, at the time, I had very good insurance for my husband's work, and they didn't cover orthodontics. I mean, I was like, okay, this is here
And
we are.
right. And there's a formula for it all. You know, a dental practice is a functioning business that has to pay bills and survive financially. So it has to be appropriate fees to run that office. And I get that there is a expense to go into a dental office. However, that doesn't mean everybody can afford that. And so affordability, once we built this model, we realized, well, we could deliver this service at a fraction of the cost that it is to come to my office or any office really. So now you have a fraction of the cost It opens it up to an opportunity for people who can't afford to travel far or pay an expense when they have two, three, four children. And I receive those notes too. A lot of the notes come in. I'd love to do an ELF or this or that early for my child, but the next office is 4 hours away. I can't travel there. The next note category is the money. I've got four children and we got an estimate. It's $12,000 or $8,000 or, but times the kids and we just can't do that. You know, we're trying to save for college. It's not in the budget to do it. So I get it. Access and affordability. Every child now has an opportunity. Should their parents look into Toothpillow and realize, yep, we believe this is a great opportunity for our child. You have an affordable way to start putting your child in the right direction for breathing and musculature, teeth, bite, and jaw growth and development remotely. You don't have to travel anywhere. And then as we do all these assessments and we screen, there is that smaller percentage of kids in 8 to 12 where we might need the expanders because I know Toothpillow can't get that. It pains me to deny anybody, but we do try to write a note telling them we do have to find a provider for you to go to. We try to get them connected to someone who will do a beautiful expansion like you had.
And that's what you were talking about with the screening. So what the process is you apply, you take pictures of your child's mouth, and then they will send you, well, so you click on the video consult, and a dentist will actually look at your child's mouth and tell you what is wrong, what needs to be addressed, and all of that. And I think that's the beauty of it is that like most of the time, to get access to a biologic dentist or a dentist that focuses on the airway, you have to drive hours. I mean, I have to drive an hour to my dentist here locally, that focuses on whole body health. And so it you have so the fact that you can have a child apply and take pictures of the mouth and get a dentist that knows about these things to look at the child's mouth and say what would be best? I think that's amazing. Because it's just the access to it is just not there for most people. And so then you get this video consult back, and then you decide after that whether or not you feel like this is the right plan for your child. I will tell you that video is very informative. It's very helpful to know, like, well, this is what we want to see here. And it's just a very helpful guide for you. And so that's a great way for you to help expand your child's palate. Even if you had all the things line up where they where you where you know you had a small jaw develop, and I did, like both of my children did.
And we do say expand the child's palate and things like that. And I'll throw one little thing in there because I know the critics who say these are useless, but I've been using them for 21 years and they're not. The guide is not an expander. So when someone says, oh, that's not an expander, that can't do that. The guide redirects your breathing and muscles, and your jaws are too small because your muscles weren't doing the right thing. So the thing to do is recruit the body's natural palate expander. That's the tongue. So the guide is one of the pieces of the puzzle that gets the tongue doing the right thing. The tongue is your palate expander. Basically, the tongue proper function grows both jaws. The tongue is what's growing your jaws when it's used, you know, properly. So we just want to help that out. And that means the guides help that and the exercises help that. So we're getting basically back to the most natural way to have your jaw growth and development is the tongue. And we can get the tongue with the guides and the exercises. So it is a wonderful opportunity. We do ask parents the questions about the symptoms because we do want to learn. And it's like in a dental office. If you walk into a dental office with your child and the paperwork says medical history, dental history, you're filling those things out anyway. So the correlation is that some things are related. So we do ask the sleep breathing questionnaire. We ask about things that are the symptoms because a lot of parents are going to know right away, oh, we've got a list of symptoms. We're struggling with X, Y, and Z over here. But they don't necessarily have the connection to the breathing, sleeping, and jaw growth and development. But once they see this bigger puzzle, and we have a lot of it outlined on our website, they get it. And then earlier treatment is your opportunity. So, you know, the thing is, I can't help a 15-year-old between the ages of 3 and 12 because they're 15. So it's nice to have the opportunity 3 to 12 when your child is in that range. Yeah. So learning that this is an opportunity early helps you now. And why should someone learn about this when their child is 14? Like I missed my window now. So I'd rather all people know there's a choice early. Once you do your research, you make a decision for yourself and your child if it's a good pathway and you go get it done, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I'm super thankful for this pathway. It's been a great thing for us. And I know that there are a lot of parents that are so thankful for the work that you've done to make this program accessible to just millions of people. Whereas before, they just had no access. And so I'm super thankful for that. And I'm thankful that you came on this program because I feel like I learned so much just talking to you over the last hour. It's been so great. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about or anything else we didn't cover?
I would do one last thing, and I would say that it's not just me. There's a massive team behind me that makes me look good. And so the Tooth Pillow team, I've never been around as large a group of caring individuals in my life. And I'm old. I'm in dentistry 31 years. I don't know if I broadcast my age right now, but I'm in dentistry 31 years. I've been around a lot of people. The team at Tooth Pillow are some of the most caring people on the planet. And they have a primary focus of helping children early. And so you're in for a treat if you do get involved with Tooth Pillow, because you're going to meet some of the nicest people on the planet that want nothing more than to help a child early. And when you do see that happen, you really feel good about it. So they have incredible motivation. They have their mission appropriate and attitude in the right place that is just in line with helping kids, live a better life through better breathing and sleeping, jaw growth and development. So you have a wonderful group behind me, and they make me look good. So I know I'm on with you, and you're complimenting me, and I appreciate that. And it's very nice to hear. I am trying, I'm working hard to make sure more kids have access to something that was good for my practice and my local community. But in the end, Tooth Pillow is a much bigger team of people behind the scenes doing wonderful things with these parents and children. And I want to make sure that that gets out there. It's a great group.
I echo that because I work with a lot of companies in what I do,
Yeah.
and I will say I am just impressed, so impressed by how they handle everything at Tooth Pillow. It is truly a company that I can like stand behind and feel just really confident in those people and how they treat these people, how they treat the customer, the patients coming in. I know they're not going to say yes to a patient that's not going to help the child. They're not going to say yes. They truly want just more children getting the correct jaw development that they truly need. And so I love that I can stand behind that company and I'm super thankful for it.
Thank you very much for having me today. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you guys. See you next week.